This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Do we want to get rocked?
Late for your weekly dose of rock and roll. This is Get Loud with Stevie on Joy 94.9.
Right now, I'm going to play for you a chat that I had with Giles Taylor, who plays Freddie Mercury as part of the Queen It's a Kind of Magic tribute show. It's a lot more than a tribute show. It's a balls to the wall tribute show. What I mean is, sometimes you get along to see a tribute show down the local RSL, local pub, wherever it might be, and it's a bunch of lads singing songs by a particular band. I'm thinking in particular of a lot of U2 tribute bands that I seem to have somehow ended up in the audience for over time. This show, this Queen show, is far, far more than that. Giles plays Freddie for 2 hours on stage in front of you. It's unscripted, and he spent months and arguably years refining his performance and even worked with Freddie's former personal assistant to really channel the spirit of Freddie Mercury for you on stage. Anyway, I'll let Giles tell you all about it. Hi, Giles. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Not too bad, thank you. Thanks for joining me this evening.
Oh, you're welcome. Pleasure's mine. Thank you.
You are playing Freddie Mercury as part of the Queen It's a Kind of Magic show.
What an amazing thrill it is as well. It's absolutely incredible. Of course, we're coming over to Melbourne very soon, so we're looking forward to that. I've performed in Melbourne before, but certainly not in this guise. So it's going to be really good to bring the Queen show over to Melbourne. Really looking forward to it.
So you haven't been here with the Queen show?
No, we stopped in briefly, but we did a very small show. We're doing 2 shows there this time as part of a select number of cities across the world that we're doing a tour in. Usually we would tour Australia and we'd do, you know, some of the big cities and also some of the smaller ones as well. But we've basically handpicked some cities across the world that we're basically going to do to focus and try some new songs and try a new set out and stuff like that. So we're very excited about it.
Fantastic. So what is the makeup of the show?
Effectively, the show is 2 hours, and it's what we consider to be the best live moments of Queen compacted into those 2 hours. So obviously, you've got a bit of your infamous Wembley set there. Also, a lot of their earlier stuff that was live, and some of their, you know, hits, sadly, up until Freddie's death in the early 90s. So it really does encompass the whole thing from the creation of Queen right up until, like I say, when Freddie passed away, sadly.
So how did you specifically get involved with this show?
The production company called Showtime Australia basically had worldwide auditions for all 4 of the parts, not just my part. I was working in London at the time. I was doing a show in London, and my agent said to me, would you be interested in trying out for this? They're basically looking for someone who has Freddie vocal range but can also play all the piano parts live. So I said yes. I obviously jumped at the chance. I thought it'd be a great opportunity, not to mention a fantastic challenge. And to cut a long story short, after about 8 months of different auditions all over the world, they eventually gave me a call and said, right, you're it. Let's see if you can pull it off.
Wow, fantastic. And as you say, Freddie Mercury, not an easy man to emulate. How did you prepare yourself for that?
I don't think anyone can prepare themselves. When I went through the audition process, you're so focused on getting everything right for the audition and eventually getting the part. And it's only when I finally got the part that it finally sunk in. I was like, oh my God, these are huge shoes to fill. I'm now considered to be the person who's capable of doing this. But the production company said, you know, you've got the role. We're now going to go into rehearsals. But if it's not working in the rehearsals, then we'd rather not do the show than do it badly. So there's a lengthy rehearsal process. There's a lot of preparation, both vocally, because although I have the same range as him, my vocal styling is very, very different. On top of that, character-wise, I spent a lot of time with Freddie Mercury's ex-personal assistant, a gentleman called Peter Freestone, who was on our production team, and basically lived with him and learned how Freddie would live and learned his mannerisms and learned the way he would do things and things he would say and things he wouldn't, so that when it came for me to be on stage, it didn't look as though it was scripted, which is not. The production company basically gives me free rein over what I do, what I say, as long as it goes with the flow of the show. And if you're going to do that, it has to look very, very natural. So I spent a lot of time effectively pretending to be Freddie outside of on stage.
So the authenticity is clearly very important to not only yourself, but the production crew and the whole production.
Very much so. And I think this is why a lot of tribute shows get a bad name, because they don't do it authentically. They basically just go up and sing the songs of whoever it is they're trying to imitate, which is all very well to pay tribute to someone like that. But if you're going to pass yourself off as, you know, the greatest Whitney Houston or the greatest Freddie Mercury in the world, then, you know, you've really got to try and do it well. You have to do it to the best of your ability and make sure there's no one else out there who can do it any better.
Absolutely. Did you feel any pressure then on you as you're getting into the role, and even now still?
I still do. The wonderful thing about getting a role like this is it's just as hard to keep it as it is to get it. There are some amazing, young, talented piano players and singers who are, you know, chomping at my heels for a role like this. So it really keeps me on top of the game. I don't get a minute's rest. I'm constantly rehearsing, constantly trying to do things new, constantly trying to make sure that I haven't slipped away from Freddie and, you know, got into too much of my own personal character into it. So, yeah, it's constant work, but it's enjoyable work. I really do love it.
What is the response from the audiences been?
Absolutely amazing. We put this out first to trial with myself playing Freddie about 3 years ago. And, well, we're now 3 years on. We're still touring. We're coming back to cities that we've done before due to popular demand. So, you know, really can't complain. If the production company didn't think it was worth it, they certainly wouldn't do it. They have many other shows that they can run. This is not the only show that the company has. But they're really, really behind this one, because it does have such a huge, huge and really good response.
You have toured it to a number of cities around the world, as you say, and you're going back to cities that you visited before. Is there any city or audience that is particularly Queen savvy or really into it?
I think everywhere you go, there are a number of Queen fans, and there are also a number of people who come out of curiosity, maybe because they like the musical, maybe they just want to see, you know, if what we do can really emulate the original Queen. Bizarrely, the most popular place that we've been and the place that we get asked to go back to again and again is Singapore. Who knew?
Singapore. Okay, that's interesting.
Singapore. But they have a ridiculous amount of rock fans over there. And today, I believe, I'm mis-directed, but I believe that's our biggest selling show. We did about 5,000 in Singapore two nights. So we had 10,000 people over a weekend.
Wow, that's fantastic.
And it's just in one of their really, really large theatres. It wasn't a festival or anything like that. So those numbers are mind-blowing.
So for you, was Queen an influence on you before you got this role?
To be honest, I've always been a classic rock fan. I grew up on Zeppelin and stuff like that, and I've always really enjoyed their music. Queen, I think, to be honest, I probably got into it a little bit later. I preferred the earlier classic rock, but as I got more and more into it, I kind of sort of branched out and tried to see what other people who were in or at least had a toe in the classic rock genre were doing, and Queen was obviously one of those. And I think it's one of those bands that when you listen to, some of their stuff sounds relatively simple, albeit quirky, but once you start to rehearse it and try and play it, you realize how complex it is. And I think that's the sign of a great performer. If they can do something really complex but make it look or sound very simple, that's where their genius is.
I think you're absolutely correct with that one. In terms of your performance, what is your favourite song to perform?
My favourite song has to be Fat Bottomed Girls, because it's quite simply it's the one that stays in the set list no matter where we go in all over the world. We usually have to change a couple of tunes because, for example, what may have been a hit in Australia would not have been a hit in Singapore or in Canada. So we have to adjust our set list accordingly. But that one is always there. Everyone knows it all over the world. And also, it was the first Queen song I remember hearing when I was about 8 or 9 years old.
I think a lot of us have that young memory of that song particularly. I know for myself, I have a younger sister who is a good 10 years younger than me. And I remember her as a 2-year-old knowing the words to that exact song, which is a little bit worrying, but also I'm very proud.
I think it appeals to the schoolboy or girl humour kind of thing. But when you're that kind of age, you know, singing about kind of fat bottoms and stuff, it seems very amusing.
This is very much so. In terms of performing as well, is there any tracks that get you quite emotional as you're delivering them to the audience?
I think there's it's an awkward question. There's tracks that Freddie would have done emotionally, so I portray them as the way he would have done them.
Yep.
But ones that are emotional to me, that's a good question, one which I've not been asked before. I really don't know. I would have to get back to you on that one. I actually don't know the answer to that. I'd have to probably watch one of my performances and see whether I cheer up.
No, that's fair enough. I guess Freddie Mercury was a very passionate performer, so I guess that's where that question comes from for me. There's a lot of context in what he sings and a lot of history and, you know, a lot of charisma to what he does, that there are a lot of songs that seem to have peak in emotion, I guess you is a way to put it. So I wondered if that kind of flowed onto you through your performance.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's nothing worse than a singer who's singing a song and doesn't even really know what they're singing about. They're just relaying the words.
Exactly.
If you can get into the understanding of a song, then it's easier to get emotional about it. Sometimes you don't even have to try. The song leads to the emotion, which if you're doing some, you know, kind of soppy love ballad or something, is exactly what you want. I mean, that's perfect. The great thing about Freddie for me is I can be in the middle of a ballad and then Freddie would have done something ridiculously flamboyant.
Yes.
As the song takes a big tangent. So it's almost a bipolar performance. You can be, you know, really upset about something and then suddenly have to burst in and start running across the stage and do something really random. And I think that's why, A, Freddie Mercury was so popular, and B, why I love playing his role so much, because it really is very eccentric.
Traveling around the world as you do with your fellow performers and crew, do you all get along?
Yeah, you have to. We are a family and a very tight and close-knit family. I don't know if you have any siblings. I have a younger brother. I love him to death, but I fight with him. So inevitably, you're going to fight with your colleagues at some point. But, you know, you're adults, you're touring, you're basically doing what everyone wants to do from a very young age. And to be given that opportunity to blow it over something as silly as a disagreement is, it's pointless. So, yeah, we'll occasionally step out of the room and take space for ourselves, which is good. But yeah, it's very much a family coming together at Christmas. There's always that annoying uncle, but yeah, we love each other dearly.
So what can Melbourne audiences expect from you in early July?
Quite simply, it's 2 hours of the best of Queen's hits. If you're a Queen fan, come along, you are not going to be disappointed. If you're not a Queen fan, then by all means come along, because I guarantee you're going to know more tunes than you think you did, and you're going to know tunes, and you're going to sit there and go, oh, is that Queen? Oh, I love that tune. I didn't know it was Queen. Happens all the time. Guarantee it. So if you're a Queen fan, come. If you're not a Queen fan, come.
I love that idea that there are people in the audience not realizing a Queen song is a Queen song. That seems so sad to me that you wouldn't know that sort of information.
It's unbelievable. The other unbelievable thing is the number of people who shout out Pinball Wizard thinking that Queen
Wizard. Oh, no! That's brilliant.
But one gig out of every five or six, someone goes, Pinball Wizard.
Oh, no.
Pinball Wizard.
How embarrassing for that person.
I know.
Just quickly, the rumours that have been circulating about a Queen movie, what do you think about that?
Firstly, I think it's a great idea. If you're going to pay tribute to someone's life, then I think it's wonderful to do it. But my understanding of the situation is that the way in which it's being done is more for the legacy of Brian and Roger Taylor, rather than giving a sort of warts-all version of what Freddie did and didn't get up to. So I think they're trying to find some middle ground between not so much the truth and what wasn't the truth, but what is going to be acceptable for, you know, an average moviegoer.
I am going to play a Queen track, but I'd like for you to choose it for me. What would you like me to play for all our Joy listeners?
Oh, give me the choice of anything here.
Of anything.
In that case, let's go a bit left field and do Lazy on a Sunday Afternoon.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, because it's not one of the mainstream ones, but it has this kind of vaudeville chic that I really like about it. We have occasionally thrown it into our show once or twice, much to the confused faces of an audience, but we do like to be self-important sometimes. We did some very eccentric songs, and we do enjoy playing those as well as the hits. So there's certainly a fair mixture for normal fans and the diehard fans as well. But yes, that would be my choice.
You are here on the 8th and 9th of July at the Athenaeum in Melbourne. You can find information about that via itsakindofmagic.com or Queen It's a Kind of Magic on Facebook. Thank you so much for talking to me, Giles.
Thank you so much for having me. I do appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au.
Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.